The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from HGTV's Weekend Gardener e-newsletter, the State-by-State Gardening e-newsletter, the Triangle Gardener magazine, and maybe from Tips for the Lazy Gardener by Linda Tilgner. We'll start with HGTV's Weekend Gardener. 10 Steps to Your Best Tomatoes Ever by Julie Martins Forney. Love tomatoes? Get ready for your best harvest yet, thanks to these easy grow tips. Big, beautiful tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes deliver flavor and then some. Raising your own crop of sun-ripened maters is one of summer's official best rewards. All it takes to grow outstanding tomatoes is attention to detail. Cover the basics, and you'll be savoring a delicious harvest. By the way, if the thought of growing larger-than-life tomatoes packed with flavor and history appeals to you, check out heirloom varieties like Mortgage Lifter, Bear Claw, or Mariana's Peace. Choose the right varieties. Take time to select tomatoes that suit your growing conditions. Typically, if a tomato is for sale in your area, you'll get good results. If local garden clubs, master gardeners, or public gardens have plant sales, that's a terrific spot to find tomatoes adapted to your region. Also, select tomatoes that work for how you intend to use them. You can find maters for slicing, sauce making, or salads. The Orange Roma Tomato Sunrise Sauce is the only non-heirloom orange paste tomato on the market and whips up a bright sauce that's as delicious as it is colorful. Lastly, choose varieties that deliver the flavor you crave. For instance, tomatoes exist that offer low acid, higher lycopene content, smoky overtones, or intense sweetness. Plant deep. The best tomatoes come from plants with a strong root system. Give your plants a head start on healthy roots by planting seedlings deep in the soil. Start by removing the lowest leaves on your seedling and burying the lower stem. Tomato stems produce roots easily. Any portion of the stem you bury will sprout roots that help nourish and support the fruit-laden plant. This tomato seedling is definitely overdue for planting. And they show a picture of one. Notice it has roots starting to appear along the lower stem. The stem on this seedling should be buried right up to the gloved fingers. In this case, a short trench may offer the best option for accommodating that curved stem. Start the season early. An unspoken badge of honor always goes to the gardener with the earliest tomato. Technology makes getting that first tomato even easier, thanks to products like the Pop-Up Tomato Accelerator. It uses greenhouse covering material to create a growing environment that surrounds seedlings with warm air, which keeps plants cozy on cool spring nights. That means you can tuck tomatoes in the soil as soon as it warms up, even though air temps might still be on chilly side. Using individual mini greenhouses accelerates plant growth, allowing you to pick fresh tomatoes up to a few weeks sooner than from plants grown without the hothouse effect. Keep tomato vines off the ground to protect ripening fruit from pest and disease. Stake tomatoes. Hoisting vines with cages or stakes also make it much easier to pick fruit. With tomatoes, disease is one of the top problems you'll encounter. Staking and supporting vines increases airflow around leaves, which can help reduce disease outbreaks. Be sure to choose a tomato support that suits the mature size of the plant. Many traditional tomato cages are too short to support heirloom tomatoes efficiently. water tomatoes properly. Tomato plants need consistent watering to yield the most healthy and flavorful fruit. When plants do not get enough water, the result can be deformed or small tomatoes, and blossom end rot can develop, where the bottom of the tomato turns black. Because of how susceptible tomato plants are to fungus diseases, it's best to water plants at ground level using drip irrigation, soaker hoses, or creative solutions like a tomato halo. This device holds 3 quarts of water, delivering it directly to the root zone of the plant, which encourages deep rooting. The red color of watering halos reflects wavelengths of light to tomato plants that promote fruiting. Mulch soil. It's important to cover soil beneath tomatoes with a mulch of some kind, such as straw, grass clippings, compost, or shredded leaves. Many tomato diseases spend part of their time living in soil. When rain hits the soil, particles splash up and can land on lower tomato leaves, leading to a disease outbreak. Covering soil is one way to help control tomato diseases. Mulch also helps the soil stay moist, which helps ensure a hefty tomato crop. One more great reason to mulch: it suppresses weeds. Prune tomatoes. Remove lower leaves on tomato plants to help reduce disease outbreaks. Wait until the first tomatoes form and remove leaves below the first fruit cluster. This helps prevent disease spores living in soil from splashing onto lower leaves during rainstorms. Combining a thick mulch with lower leaf pruning are 2 simple steps that bring big results toward improving your tomato harvest. Learn about other tomato pruning tips. Pick problem tomatoes. It's not unusual to visit your tomato patch and discover fruits with all kinds of problems. Heavy rain can cause tomatoes to crack, as roots absorb so much water that it literally makes the tomatoes split their skins. This is a big problem with cherry tomatoes especially, but it happens with all types. You might also discover tomatoes that critters have been nibbling. Squirrels, chipmunks, deer, even turtles will chomp at ripening tomatoes, seeking moisture. Slugs, earwigs, and stink bugs also attack tomatoes and break the skin. Anytime you have a tomato that's damaged, the best tactic is to remove it from the garden. Bury it in your compost pile. Toss it into a far part of your yard. Carry it indoors or drop down the disposal. Do whatever works for you, but definitely get rid of it. Problem fruits roll out the welcome mat to other pests, fruit flies, wildlife, and diseases. If possible, bury the problem tomatoes to try and contain any pest outbreaks. Pick problem tomatoes from the Triangle Gardener magazine. This article is Crinum Super Ellen, a tough southern belle. This is by Kit Flynn. For an imposing garden accent, one that is totally deer-proof, look no further than Crinum Super Ellen, a highly opinionated lady. Super Ellen is well worth the effort because she is the showiest of all the crinums. I first saw her at Jim Massey's Holly Hill Daylily Farm, where she was making her typically dramatic appearance. Like the diva she is, she never says, "Look at me," because she knows all eyes are on her. She knows she's the winner of the ubiquitous beauty pageant, so she demands that I'll show her the respect she deserves. Jim promised me one of her offspring as soon as she put out a side bulb, warning that the lady could be slow on the reproductive scale. However, as luck would have it, when I called him the following March, he said he had 2 bulbs, one reserved for me. At the beginning of the season, I went out, and there she was in all her glory, waiting for me to take her home. But little did I know. Crinums are conservative creatures that dislike relocation. Understatement. The universal rule with crinums is that you need to sight them carefully so that you will never, ever move them. My Super Ellen wasn't at all sure she was joining a nice family, so she sulked throughout that first summer, managing to put out only 2 or 3 new leaves. The next year, she relaxed a bit, deigning to throw out a scape or two. And then I did the unthinkable. I cut back her leaves in the fall rather than in the spring. As soon as it happened, I knew I had done wrong, as the saying goes. Hell hath no fury more than a pruned at the wrong time Super Ellen. The next May, I was on the phone with Jim, wailing that I'd feared I'd killed her. There was no sign of life, but neither was there any sign of death. Jim arrived, armed with another Super Ellen. He wasn't sure she was dead, but then he wasn't sure she was alive. Finally, in July, Super Ellen number one stirred. There was life in the old lady. Gradually, she produced some leaves, but no scapes. I apologized, and we began an uneasy relationship that lasted throughout that third summer. Her leaves remained attached until the following spring, and she begrudgingly threw out more scapes for the next 2 summers. Then she was challenged, and proving like the diva she was, she rose to face it. I planted Rosa Peggy Martin near her. Now, Peggy Martin is nice. She does not sulk. She does what she's supposed to do, which is to grow to incredible heights, producing, no exaggeration, 5,000 blooms in the spring. The effect on Super Ellen's number one was electric. The diva, used to owning the garden, was upstaged by an upstart, a usurper. At this point, she began growing, producing scape after scape, filled with flowers. It's impossible to own just one Super Ellen. I now have 3. Number 2 and number 3 are lovely, rather gentle souls who perform the way they should. Crinums, on the whole, don't make me laugh, though number 1 certainly does. When the Rosarian Peggy Martin returned to her home after Hurricane Katrina, the only 2 plants still alive in her garden were a crinum and a nameless rose that she designated as Peggy Martin, the Katrina rose. Perhaps it was inevitable that crinum Super Ellen and Rosa Peggy Martin should end up side by side in my garden. Now, Finding Friends in My Garden by Lise Jenkins. Garden long enough, and you'll likely begin to attribute human traits to your plants. The irises I purchased for their showy colors have now revealed themselves as divas that only perform under exacting conditions, whereas the single clump of black-eyed Susans has voluntarily expanded its chorus line and will soon be kicking color up along a sunny wall. However, it's another resident of my garden that's captured my heart because it reminds me of my childhood friend, my teddy bear. I'm hooked on hydrangeas and grow several different varieties. The genus hydrangea is comprised of 35 species consisting of small trees, shrubs, and climbing forms. These break down into a dizzying collection of varieties and cultivars, producing plants suitable for nearly every location and condition. In the wild, hydrangeas are often found at woodland's edge, thriving in filtered sunlight and moist, fertile soil. Capitalizing on their popularity, plant breeders have cultivated hydrangeas that sport a range of colors, grow in different sizes and shapes, and prosper in varying degrees of sunlight. Gardeners are often attracted to hydrangeas based on the shape of their blooms, which are actually clusters of small flowers. Hydrangea Microphylla, commonly called big leaf or mophead hydrangeas, are popular for their large, colorful blooms, which can range from red to pink to lavender to deep blue, depending on the pH of the garden soil. A more acidic soil, below pH 7, turns their color blue, while a more alkaline soil, above pH 7, encourages red or pink blooms. Another popular species is Hydrangea paniculata. It bears conical, typically creamy white blooms that later mature into a blushing pink or dusty rose color. Willing to tolerate less than perfect growing conditions, H. paniculata can thrive in sunnier, drier sites in colder climates. These attributes make them welcomed guests in my garden. Last season I fell for one particular hydrangea, lava lamp flare, and this is where my childhood friend enters the picture. Introduced by Bloom and Easy, this hydrangea has a compact 3 feet by 3 feet size and will do well in full to part sun. It has captured my heart because it takes me back to my childhood. Greeting me at the door, the creamy white blooms look just like my teddy bear's head. Early in the season, the blooms look skyward, but as maturity approaches, the weight of the large teddy bear blooms causes the stems to form an attractive arch. With time, and perhaps knowledge of my childhood affection, my teddy bear's face begins to blush a dusky pink on his cheeks and ears. As the season fades, the drying blooms turn brown, and my chubby-cheeked beloved friend retreats to his den for his winter nap. I am looking forward to his return this year. Now, from the State by State Gardening e-newsletter, Make a Dinosaur Garden by Ellen Zakos. In the morning mist, ferns bend toward the forest floor, weighed down by dew. Moss blankets the earth. Suddenly, the ground shudders. The stems of a giant cycad, C-Y-C-A-D, shake, and then part to reveal a ferocious beast, armed with terrifying claws and teeth, made of sturdy red plastic. I firmly advocate getting your little ones hooked on gardening early, and since very few youngsters can resist dinosaurs, why not lure them into the garden with a T-Rex or two? A child who plays in the dirt will respect the environment and marvel at the wonders of life. Those are things I'd like to encourage. Ferns, mosses, and cycads are ancient plants. They predate the flowers and trees we cultivate in our gardens, yet they're no more difficult to grow. And they make excellent dinosaur garden plants. For an indoor dinosaur garden, choose a container large enough to accommodate 3 or 4 different plants, as well as some interesting dinosaurs. Outdoors, set aside a section of garden far from your delicate roses and lavender. Dinosaurs can play rough. Of course, these are plastic dinosaurs. Here are 7 plants perfect for a prehistoric landscape. Remember, the tropicals listed here will be annual plants if you plant them outdoors in our region. Plant suggestions. Cinnamon fern is a large, dramatic fern that grows to be 4 feet tall. Each clump of upright fronds surrounds several cinnamon-colored fronds at its center. It grows best in dappled sunlight and moist soil and is hardy to USDA Zone 3. Horsetail is hardy to USDA Zone 3. It can be invasive in wet conditions, so grow this in a container or some place where you can let it run. This pencil-straight evergreen plant grows to be 3 to 4 feet tall. Japanese painted fern is a lovely, variegated fern with silver and pink markings. It grows well in shady, moist conditions and is hardy to Zone 3. Whisk fern is not a true fern. It's a tropical plant that resembles a whisk broom. It has slim, branching stems that grow to be 12 to 18 inches tall and does equally well in shade or sun with moist potting mix. Little club moss is a subtropical ground cover that creeps along the surface of your dinosaur garden. Different cultivars have blue-green or chartreuse foliage. This plant is an annual in our region. Staghorn fern is a tropical fern with sturdy, gray-green fronds that emerge from brown, papery sheaths. It grows best indoors in bright, indirect light. The zizi plant is a tropical cycad with a reputation for being hard to kill. It has shiny leaves on arcing stems 18 to 24 inches tall. This plant grows well indoors in sun or shade and survives on benign neglect. Creating the new, old world. Take a moment to determine the best possible arrangement for your plants. Remember, this playground is intended for a very specific population. Be sure to leave space between the plants. After all, dinosaurs need room to swing their tails. And promise you won't criticize if a leaf gets broken or the moss is trampled. Although you're allowed to help your young gardener with the planting, you don't get a vote when it comes to the garden's plastic inhabitants. These things are best left in the hands of the experts. And some events coming up from June 1st through the 2nd in Lexington, North Carolina. The 15th annual Davidson County Garden Tour. Various locations. See gardens east of Lexington and south of NC-64 in Davidson County in this year's tour. Master Gardener docents will be at each site to answer questions about the garden or gardening in general. Organized by the Davidson County Extension Master Gardeners Volunteer Association to finance community projects and to promote horticultural knowledge. June the 1st, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. June the 2nd, 1 to 5 p.m. $15 ticket for 2 days. Sale locations to be announced. Tickets are required. For more information, call 336-250-3014, 336-250-3014, or call 336-210-5365, 336-210-5365. Also from June 1st through the 2nd in Salisbury, North Carolina, it's Rowan Arts and Ag, Farms in Rowan County. Take a self-guided tour of 15 Rowan County farms, showcasing a range of arts and produce, including blacksmithing, woodwork, music, watercolors, wine, cattle, sheep, blueberries, strawberries, vegetables, and vintage machinery. June the 1st, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. June the 2nd, 1 to 5 p.m. It's free. Registration is not required. For more information, call 800-332-2343, 800-332-2343. And from the Triangle Gardener Magazine events, Spring Garden Symposium, June the 1st, 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., lectures, garden tours, vendors, and luncheon. There is a fee and you need to pre-register. This happens at the Calvary Episcopal Church in Tarboro. And a family garden walk, June the 1st, 9 a.m. to 9:45 a.m. Discover new places in the garden as you learn about the many things that live here. And it's free at the Sarah P. Duke Gardens in Durham. Call 919-668-1707. 919-668-1707 for more information. Also on June the 1st, a propagation workshop from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., a hands-on workshop to learn how to asexually propagate some of your favorite plants. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. This happens at the J.C. Rosten Arboretum in Raleigh. Call 919-515-3132, 919-515-3132 for more information. And now from Tips for the Lazy Gardener by Linda Tilgner. Easy watering. Do you water frequently? Leave a section of hose laid out down in the center of the garden. Drive double stakes of wood at intervals to keep the hose from decimating the vegetables as you pull it back and forth. Another gardener, who has several small vegetable plots, drives a stake at the corner of each bed to protect plants while he drags the hose around. Most of us move sprinklers around to get an even watering in a garden area. It takes time, and the water is rarely spread evenly. A neighbor of mine, starting a garden, set up his sprinkler and staked out exactly where it watered. Those were the boundaries of his garden. A chrysanthemum in the vegetable garden is like a canary in a coal mine. The mum wilts before other plants when water is needed, giving you early warning to start irrigating. Save your water from cooking vegetables. Let it cool. Toss out the door on the herbs or salad greens in your kitchen garden, or the flowers, if that's what grows there. In winter, use for houseplants. Beware of gifts. If your flower gardening friends offer pieces of perennials they're dividing, investigate the plant's growing habits before you plunk it in the ground. It may be a spreader that will take over the garden and become a nuisance. Have you inherited old flower gardens with your newly purchased home? It pays to sit and watch for a year. If something continues to grow despite neglect, it's hardy. Don't fight it, keep it, advises an experienced restorer of old grounds. You may find it easier to relocate gardens using old plant material rather than trying to refurbish a garden in the same place. You can prepare soil in a new bed and move pieces of plants from the old site when you are ready. If weeds are growing around the perimeter of your garden, scattering seeds into the garden, cut those weeds with a scythe. Then add them to the compost pile. The scythe is a remarkable and efficient tool in the hands of an expert. An able hand doesn't flail at the weeds with the scythe. He holds it loosely, comfortably, and moves the blade by pivoting his body, keeping the blade parallel to and close to the ground. He stops often to sharpen the blade. The scythe doesn't actually get dull that quickly, but frequent sharpening is a good way to relax shoulder and arm muscles. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is easily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long, until the next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5130.